Thank you. Greetings. This is Pastor David Bass at New Geneva Orthodox Presbyterian Church with a moment of truth where we challenge you to think through an important issue of life and faith. Today, we want to take up part two of our series called Marriage Matters. What have I done by saying I do? Sometimes we don't realize the implications of marriage, do we, until we're well into the process. And so we ask today, marriage matters. What have I done by saying I do? We've been on a hiatus from this topic over the last few weeks as we've anticipated our special speaker, Mr. David Witt, with Voice of the Martyrs. We had that Sunday. What a great time that was. A great time of fellowship and information. David brought us two very important things that the church needs to hear today. First of all, he had a raft of personal stories of the martyrs of the church around the world, especially in Muslim lands. And secondly, he brought us a theology, if you will, from the Bible for martyrdom for every Christian. So, having been fed with these truths and encouraged by them, we now move on to tackle this issue front and center, an issue front and center in our own world and culture, that is, the issue of marriage and family in America. We know that this issue is front and center because the headlines of our own newspapers scream it, don't they, daily? Recently, for example, the California Supreme Court overturned millennia of jurisprudence in striking down two state laws that had limited marriages to unions between a man and a woman. The California Supreme Court asserted that same-sex couples have a constitutional right to marry. It wasn't even a unanimous decision, however, nor even an overwhelming majority decision. Rather, it was a bare majority, a 4-3 decision, making California the second state, along with Massachusetts, to allow same-sex marriages. And this is just one example of how our American culture has gone terribly wrong, in my view, and veered drastically from the noble biblical course it had set in her early years as a republic. Our founding fathers recognized the two-parent, one-man, one-woman family as the irreducible building block of American society. No society can survive and thrive unless it perpetuates itself by propagating and multiplying. That seems so simple, doesn't it? But gay families, by definition, do not do this, but must rely upon breeders, as we straights are contemptuously called. They must then recruit and prey upon straight culture for further victims. Morally, God looks upon the family as the transmitter of a culture's Christian values and practices that, by definition, is a disobedient one in the gay culture. The military cites the necessity for unit cohesion, don't they, as a reason to reject openly accepting gays into the military. And this reason applies to society as well, I would say, on a macro scale. Tolerance and diversity, contrary to today's trends, do not make for a society's health beyond a certain boundary. Social cohesion is shattered when the foundational building block, that is the straight two-parent family, is loosened. For these and many other reasons that we have articulated in other venues in the past, and I think we're going to continue to articulate in the future too, we'll leave this topic for a more full treatment later. But we must assert that an evolving notion of marriage must be rejected and resisted at every point. One of the ways this can be effectively done is by always keeping before our children and ourselves and our families the four major purposes for marriage that God has wired into the universe. Oh, they are. There are four major purposes for marriage that God has wired into the universe. Do you know what they are, dear listener? I have found that as I ask this question, ears instinctively perk up and curiosity is aroused, precisely because there is so much confusion in our world as to the nature of marriage that men and women all through our land seem to flounder and grope for something solid upon which to base their relationships. Well, the human soul gravitates to a clear, unwavering call to purpose. And that is what I'm doing here today, calling you and everyone who listens to this unwavering call to purpose in marriage. This is right and true. since we are a purpose-driven race to our core. You, dear listener, despite what you've been told by modern anthropology, you are a purpose-driven creature. You have not been born into a random, amoral universe where you're just another animal, a higher animal, perhaps among other animals. The Darwinian model of purpose is one where there is no purpose inherent in nature except that which furthers the survival of the species, and man is therefore free to create any purpose whatsoever. You'll hear that theme in many output of what our human nature is. Our particular adaptive skills, according to them, to the Darwinian, happen to be that we're sentient creatures who walk upright, we have opposable thumbs, etc., etc., and we have made up religion in the past, according to modern sociology of religion. We have made up religion in order to regiment culture and provide reason and purpose for the race, but that there really is no there when you get right down to it, that there is no God or heaven or spiritual realm, according to atheistic science. Therefore, atheists like Richard Dawkins advise us that it's time to set aside these antiquated notions of reality and face the fact that we're alone in the universe and we're on our own. It is due to the siren song of a supposed liberty from biblical purpose that has created this deeply unsatisfying hole in the soul. I call it the hole in the soul of the average American when it comes to his or her own marriage. What's the point? I've heard so many men in particular say to me in the counseling session, what's the point anymore? It is why, as we observed in our first lesson, divorce hovers at or around 43%, and children are increasingly born into single-parent families in many American communities. We are wired for purpose in the deepest parts of our soul, but we have none. We have no purpose in our culture today. We were built to sweat, sacrifice, and run toward a noble heavenward goal, but we find it snatched from our view at the very moment we hear the starting gun, don't we? What's the point of running a race when there's no track, no finish line, no prize? What's the point of sacrificing for wife and child when there's nothing higher for which to strive than a fleeting self-happiness that often isn't achieved, and a murky impulse, perhaps, a murky impulse to propagate the species? I can do that cruising the bars and sleeping around, as one man told me in a moment of honesty as he contemplated leaving his family. We could, couldn't we? We can do that, whereas we can have a momentary fleeting happiness and propagate the species by cruising bars and sleeping around, if that was the case. No, I would submit to him and to you, dear listener, that you and your marriage have purpose and aspiration, for which you have been designed by an all-good and sovereign Creator. Once we know our purpose for something, we are able to accomplish it with a zeal and a zest perhaps not formerly present. When an oarsman knows he's pulling for the shore ahead of a storm, he does so with a motivation and energy not there before the purpose was laid out for him. When an NFL team, for example, begins a new season, they know from the first day of training camp that they're playing for the one great prize at the end, that is the Super Bowl. Well, the human race is a purpose-driven race, and we have been wired to strive and achieve in every realm of our nature, including that of marriage. Well, what are those purposes for this covenant institution of marriage? Let's take these purposes one by one. First of all, your marriage, number one, your marriage is meant to model for heaven and earth the mystery of Christ and His church. Yes, your marriage, dear listener, is meant to model for heaven and earth the very mystery of Christ and His church. Did you know that you are a model? Yes, as frumpy and unattractive and geeky as you may feel you are, as you may consider yourself to be, in comparison, that is, to the skinny, svelte, perfect paradigms of human form that populate the fashion runways of the world, whether you're male or female, as unattractive as you may feel physically, you are, nevertheless, a model set before every creature in heaven and earth. How so are you a model? Instead of the mere passing fad of human clothing, you are modeling something far more significant and profound, that is, the mystery of Christ and His church. If you're married here today, then you are modeling the mystery of Christ and His church. And as you do this, as you're wired to do, you bring a glory and a beauty into the universe that dwarfs mere human physical beauty. The Apostle Paul tells us that the covenant union between a husband and a wife is a deep, mysterious portrait of something far larger than itself. He says, and I quote him from Ephesians chapter 5, "This mystery is profound, and I am saying that it refers to Christ and the church," unquote. Your marriage is profound, a profound mystery referring to Christ and His church, listener. Christ loved and sacrificed for His church, and husbands are to love and sacrifice on behalf of their wives. The church serves and obeys her Lord Jesus Christ, and wives are to serve and obey their husbands, as Paul exhorts and as the biblical model holds out for us on every page. As your one marriage does this well, it glorifies God and brings into the universe another beautiful working model of the relationship between Christ and His church. If your union of Christ and His church, writ small, is to reflect that model accurately, it must observe several features. And I'd like to note several of those features here for you. First of all, that covenant model, your marriage, is in its nature and structure a covenant. A covenant. Now, the economy through which God dispenses grace and mercy, wrath and judgment, favor and approbation, and all of the things we have come to know God by, that economy is the economy of covenant. This is true of the church, and it is true of marriage. The economy of the church is a covenant economy, and the economy of marriage is a covenant economy. All the good things of marriage are dispensed to us in an economy, even as things in our own economy, the American economy, capitalist economy, for instance, all of the goods and riches and benefits are dispensed in a capitalist economy. Well, God works in a covenant economy. And in this regard, it is important to note that with every covenant, there is a mediator or a federal head of the covenant. This is part and parcel of every covenant economy. Christ Himself is the mediator of a new covenant, as the authors of the New Testament tirelessly point out to us. That is, Christ is the one who intercedes on behalf of the rest of the members of the covenant, and He stands as the one responsible for their welfare and the fulfillment of the various covenant duties. This is what we mean when we talk about a federal head, federal, from the Latin word foedus, meaning covenant. The federal head of a covenant is precisely the mediator of that covenant. And just as Christ is the federal head of the new covenant in the church, so the husband is wired to be the federal head of the marriage covenant. The Bible amply reveals this to us. For example, Adam was created first, Eve second. Thus, Adam is the federal head of the relationship. The Apostle Paul makes a clear point of this as he establishes the authority of men in the church when he notes, "For Adam was formed first, then Eve." That's from 1 Timothy chapter 2, a chapter dealing with authority, especially authority in the church. Adam also searches, doesn't he, for a companion to help him in the work God has for him? Adam is searching for a helpmate. You may recall in the Genesis account that Adam first parades all of the animals before him, and he names them. This naming function is that of authority. Wherever you see a naming function in the Bible, it is a function of authority. To name in the Bible is to have authority over that which is named, and God named Adam and thus held authority over him. Adam names the animals and therefore has authority over them, taking dominion in God's creation as he was commanded to do. And so too, when the woman is finally created, Adam names her Eve, that is, the mother of all living. Thus, Adam has authority in the marriage covenant as its federal head. Also, the mere fact that Eve was taken out of Adam, that is, crafted derivatively from his rib is a picture of the nature of the relationship between Adam and Eve and all subsequent marriages, too. The marriage of Adam and Eve is a paradigm for all subsequent marriages. Adam was created for the work in the Garden of Eden, and Eve was created for Adam as his helpmate. Both do the work, but this way of putting it distinguishes the authority lines in the covenant relationship of marriage. Another way of putting it is that the man needs the help while the woman needs to help. And the implications in all of this are wide, varied, and strong. I'd like to note some of these implications for you. First of all, men and husbands, it means that you are a loving mediator, not a lousy dictator. Men, you are a loving mediator, not a lousy dictator. The precise reason for the rise of the feminist movement, I think, and I have observed, the precise reason for the rise of the feminist movement is not the sudden realization of a wife's authority, but the gradual abdication of the husband's and their authority. Men abdicate their authority, don't they? A reason for the rise of the feminist movement, the abdication of a man's natural authority in the family, and they do this in one of two ways. Husbands either refuse to lead and love their wives, being in the home perhaps, but not taking authority in it, or else they abandon the home altogether. We see this in the black community over the period of welfare, don't we? Secondly, men also abdicate when they tyrannize their wives in the home. A man cannot love his wife and tyrannize her at the same time. The old picture of keeping the wife barefoot and pregnant, you've heard of that expression, right? That old picture of keeping the wife barefoot and pregnant while you, husband, have all the toys and perks of life at your disposal, this is a classic example of the tyrant husband who does not love his wife as Christ loved the church. It's always easier to act selfishly, without thought or regard for those closest to us, and this many husbands do and have done, especially as the biblical model of marriage has been lost. To dictate, to subjugate, and dominate is the impulse of many men to the destruction of their wives and homes. And when the Apostle Paul exhorts us, "Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church," Paul has in mind the considerate, self-sacrificial love that Christ demonstrated on behalf of his beloved bride, the church. He considered her needs at every step, did Christ, and he went to the point of laying down his very life on behalf of the church. And so too, husbands, you are to love your wives as Christ loved the church. You are to be a loving mediator, not a lousy dictator. Well, a second implication for husbands is that, as the federal head of your home, you are responsible for all that goes on in that home. That's a burden for you, and can be a joy, though, if you have the great help of your wife and your children. But, husbands, you must know that as the federal head of your home, you are responsible for all that goes on in it. You are the leader and sovereign, so to speak, of your home. Your wife or children may do a great deed of heroism, like save a city. Even as the proverbial Dutch boy who put his thumb in the leaking dike, he saved his country, didn't he? What a proud daddy he had. Or you may have a wife or child who does a terrible thing, like the proverbial Lady Godiva, who rode through her village in the all together. In either case, the member of your family is perhaps rewardable, as in the case of the little Dutch boy, or culpable, as in the case of Lady Godiva. But you, husband, are responsible. As the husband and father of your family and marriage, you are its federal head. Therefore, you are responsible for all that occurs in it. The first mate of a boat may get drunk and run the boat into a sandbar, maybe even sink it, and he will be morally culpable for that deed. But society will hold the captain of the boat responsible for the accident, since he is the captain. So too, God holds husbands responsible for their wives and children because they are the family's captains or federal heads. And yet a third implication for this picture of Christ and the church, marriages picturing Christ and the church, yet a third implication for this picture is that your marriage cannot help but be a picture of Christ in the church. Your marriage cannot help but be a picture of Christ in the church. Many husbands and wives do not get this. You may deny this principle and all that we say here today, but that does not in any way diminish the truth of it or destroy the model of it. Husbands, you either model Christ well or you model him poorly, but you cannot help but model Christ in the church in your marriage. Wives, you too, you either model the church well or poorly, but you cannot help but model the mystery of Christ in his church. This is the way we were made and wired, and we cannot avoid performing as either good models or bad models. A Mercedes may wish you were a Learjet in the skies or a luxury liner on the high seas, but that Mercedes will perform as an automobile wherever you put him with appropriate consequences. And so, too, a man may fancy himself a playboy or a great sultan with a harem, but God holds him responsible for modeling Christ in the church. The Mercedes that tries to fly like a Learjet will crash. The Mercedes that tries to float like a ship on the sea will sink. And so, too, the man who models anything but Christ in the church will only, in the long run, bring disaster on himself. We were created and wired to model Christ in the church before heaven and earth. And when we do this consciously and faithfully, we bring glory to God and we find ourselves fulfilled and at peace as never before. Well, a second purpose for marriage. Let me outline a second purpose for marriage for you today. That is, marriage was ordained for the mutual help of husband and wife. The confessional standards of the Orthodox Presbyterian Church have a very succinct summary of the remaining three purposes for marriage. And I quote now from our Westminster Confession of Faith, and that is, marriage was ordained for the mutual help of husband and wife, for the increase of mankind with legitimate issue, and of the church with a holy seed, and for preventing of uncleanness, unquote. And I love this idea of mutual help. As we pointed out earlier, husbands and wives were created for each other, but for different purposes. They cannot function for the purpose of marriage without one another. They need mutual help. Man was created first, and he's the federal head of the covenant marriage, but he cannot do the job of creation without a helpmate. It is not good that man should be alone, God said, and so he provided the woman as a helpmate that was perfect for him. Thus, the one needs the other, but in different ways. I quote now from Douglas Wilson in his book, Reforming Marriage, an excellent book on marriage, by the way. And Douglas Wilson says, he needs a companion suitable for him, that is the husband, in the work to which God has called him. She is called to the work through ministering to him. He is oriented to the task. She is oriented to him, unquote. Between them both, then, the image of God is complete. As Genesis chapter 5 tells us, when God created man, he made him in the likeness of God. Male and female he created them, and he blessed them and named them man when he created them, unquote. Thus, husband and wife are inextricably bound together as individuals who, taken together in the covenant bonds of marriage, mirror the singular image of God. Thus, they need each other and are bound to help each other in the fulfillment of our goals as a race. We were charged with multiplying and filling the earth. This cannot be done alone. We were charged with subduing the earth and taking dominion of it, and this cannot be done alone. The primary social unit for accomplishing this prime directive is the family, consisting of the federal head, the husband, who loves his wife as Christ loved the church, and the wife, who submits in all things and is called to the husband, even as the church is called to serve and obey her Lord, Jesus the Christ. Oh, you wives who long for fulfillment in your marriage, who long for tenderness and care and love from your husbands, follow the model laid out for you in the Bible, the model of covenant marriage. He is called to the work, you to him. He is called to sacrificially love you. You are called to sacrificially serve and submit to him. And husbands who long for that sense of accomplishment and purpose in life and marriage, for that eternal sense of completion and purpose, love your wives sacrificially, even as Christ loves his church sacrificially, even to the point of dying for her. Even as Christ lovingly, dotingly, tenderly cares for his church in the world today, so too you must lovingly, dotingly, tenderly care for your wife. And thus, you will discover the beauty and wonder of fulfilling your purpose of mutually helping one another. Thirdly, the third purpose for marriage today, marriage was ordained for the increase of mankind with legitimate issue, and of the church with a holy seed, as our standards say. In short, you're wired to procreate. To procreate means to make in addition to. In other words, one of the chief purposes for your being here on the earth is to make others in addition to you. Increase and multiply, God commands us. This is one of our prime directives as a race. And what a joy and privilege this is for you as a husband and a wife. Part of your hard wiring as humans is that you reflect the image of God in part by being a co-creator with Him in creating more little humans. Think of it. Not even the angels in heaven can do this, that is, make other little angels out of themselves. But you can do this, O husband and wife. What a privilege you have while you walk this earth. Even as God created the first man and the first woman, so we participate with Him in creating all subsequent generations out of our own bodies. And by doing so, you image God in a small way, in a derivative way, but you image Him nevertheless. Biologically, you're equipped to do this as husband and wife. Alone, you cannot. Together, you can. In this way, too, husbands and wives mutually help one another. In marriage, you fulfill the prime directive to increase and multiply. To try and play God, incidentally, to try and play God with birth control or abortion is a sin against this command. We are also intended to stock the church, so to speak, by increasing the church with a holy seed, as our standards say. The prophets declare that God seeks godly offspring, and by this is meant that God has called for the raising up of future generations in the church. Heaven will be populated by saints who have been conceived, born, and raised up in godly homes by covenant parents. This is God's grand design for filling heaven. The family is God's covenant institution for the conceiving and creating of His beloved saints, and the church is God's covenant institution for placing and perfecting His beloved saints. And to this, husband and wife, you have been called as procreator, husband and wife, in union and communion with your grand creator, the living God of the Bible. Fourthly, the fourth reason and purpose for marriage was created for mutual sexual protection. Marriage was created for mutual sexual protection. The world tells teens in school to wear protection when they have sex. By this, of course, they mean condoms, as if it were some sort of guarantee against sexually transmitted diseases. Yet, with a worldwide rampant spread of AIDS, chlamydia, gonorrhea, herpes, and a seemingly endless list of other STDs, no sexual protection seems certain. But there is one protection offered by God Himself for not only diseases of the body, but diseases of the soul. That is, faithful, monogamous covenant marriage. A husband and wife who know one another exclusively in their sexual lives, one with another, will not only be protected from physical STDs, but will also be protected from diseases of the soul. Adultery, pornography, the wandering, flirtatious eye, the sexual perversions of all kinds wound and damage the soul like nothing else, don't they? How many twisted, broken souls are wandering around in our world because they have wandered from the purpose of their sexual being, that is, faithful, monogamous, covenant marriage. This is the model set before us. It's simple, clear, and beautiful, and it too mirrors the joy and intimacy of Christ and His church. No one knows the true joy and purpose of their sexual being like the married couple who have been faithful and monogamous all of their lives. For them, the husband is protected in his heart and purpose with a godly jealousy for his wife. And for the wife, she is protected in her emotions and labors within the family, knowing that he is for her exclusively. And as you strive for this purpose, dear husband and wife, you will discover the fullness and completion of your being as it was meant to be, with a consequent rejection, too, of the world's model of a so-called liberated sexuality that in the end is but a slavery to lust, disease, and boredom. Rather, God has designed faithful, monogamous covenant marriage as a protection for both body and soul. Dear listener, if you have not already, begin today to shape your marriage according to these four grand purposes. Despite what the world tells you, you are wired for it in body and soul. This has been Pastor David Bass at New Geneva Orthodox Presbyterian Church with a moment of truth, where we challenge you to think through this important issue of life and faith. New Geneva meets for holy worship 10 a.m. on Sundays at 101 4th Street on the corner of 4th and Boulevard. Call us at 523-0196.